Episode 118 is brought to you by our very good friends, EJ Cards. EJ Cards sell all types of cards, NBA, NFL, NHL, soccer cards, Pokemon cards. They buy, they sell, they trade. They're always doing interesting things in the hobby, so their trade days are a huge success. Their next trade day has already been organized. Put this into your calendar. Sunday, December the 10th, Shop 3, number 2 to 4 Whitehorse Road in Blackburn, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Designated kids trading zone, just staff supervised. Free drinks and snacks all day. Carson's Pokemon Mega Holiday Boxes will be available for sale. Do not sleep on these. The Mega NBA Mystery Boxes, I'm sure, will be packed up by RIMP. Discounted singles. There might be another Kobe autograph in the stalls there. Live openings. And of course, more announcements to come. Check them out, guys. They've also got a webpage, ejcards.com.au. Selling sealed, selling breaks, the whole lot. Check them out. Thanks, EJ Cards, and have a great day. Welcome, everybody, to episode 118 of the You Can't Comp This NBA podcast. I am your host, Russell Gibson. And this week, unfortunately, Adam's taking a leave of absence, but in his place, we've got Matthew Yuga from Matt's Card Shop. Have I got that right, Matt?
Yeah, you've got that right.
Excellent.
Nah, but big shoes to fill. I'm happy to join. I think last time was just over a year ago. So yeah, excited to join you guys again for your podcast.
To be fair, I have been asking you every couple of months to come on. So I think
we'll
try and make it less than a year for the next appearance. If you could please, mate, that'll be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for people at home that have just got no idea who you are, because maybe they haven't heard the last podcast, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and some of the projects you've got on the go? Because you're quite involved in the hobby and you're always popping up around the place. So
yeah, well, I guess obviously at heart, just being a sports card collector my whole life, in and out when I was younger. And then, like a lot of people came back in just before COVID. Was doing my own little thing, buying and selling, all that sort of stuff, making mistakes. And I always had this sort of one thing that I wanted to do ever since I was a little kid. And that was to start a YouTube channel. So I think when COVID happened, I don't know, it might have been my mindset at the time that I was just kind of like, you know what, like, let's just start doing things that are out of your comfort zone and, yeah, you know, things that you want to do. First up, it was the Instagram. Thought to myself, like, oh, that was, you know, I was a little bit scared starting that. Then it was TikTok. And I remember asking my friends, and then just saying, oh, what do you think if I started this? Just thinking that they'd be like, oh, why would you do that? But everyone in my life was saying, no, go ahead and do it. So the next step was the YouTube channel. And then, everyone was all on board on that. So now I've been doing that now for 2.5 years.
Yeah, sweet.
Posting, I don't know, anywhere from 1 to 2 times a week. People out there that do watch the YouTube channel regularly, I've had a few questions, people asking, thinking that I do it full time. I don't. I do have a full time job outside of sports cards.
Yeah.
All of this is all my own little time.
Yeah.
I feel like, I am a one man show. I do get help from my wonderful wife and obviously a lot of people around me. But
I'll just interrupt you there. I think we need to emphasize how supportive she is of you, because she was at the card show. And if I've watched correctly, she was there the whole day, right?
Yeah, last 3 card shows I've set up at, she's been there. Absolutely need her. the show doesn't run for me without her, so she's been a massive help in terms of setting up. Even the background stuff, labeling cards, pricing cards, all that sort of stuff.
Like, yeah, right.
I've given
so she's really involved in it then. Yeah.
Yeah. I obviously dumb it down for her. I'll just be like, oh, these cards are $20. Let's just put red tape on this. Or can you price label this amount, that sort of stuff. Just very simple. I don't know. I guess we support each other's goals and that sort of stuff. So even though I know she doesn't want to be there, yeah, I've supported her on her goals and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah
I think it works both ways.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, I guess with the YouTube channel now, it's been a grind overall. Obviously, again, like I was saying, doing it on top of the full-time job, but learning skills. It's not as easy as obviously just recording a video and just chucking it up there. I think I've gotten a bit more efficient at the process generally, but at the start it was coming up with a script, learning how to talk to a lens, feel like you're obviously not talking to anyone. Then learning how to edit, learning how to come up with a catchy thumbnail, catchy title, the YouTube algorithm, all that sort of stuff. So I think it's a massive process. And I think there's definitely, I've got a lot of respect for a lot of YouTubers that do it full time. Obviously, they outsource it as they get bigger and bigger, and that would be the dream. But it's a massive, massive long process for little gain, I'd say. But again, I did it more as a hobby and something I've always wanted to do. So yeah. I always tell people that when they, I have had a lot of questions through the DMs just saying, like, what are your recommendations on starting a YouTube channel? And I think my number one thing would be don't do it if you're in it for the money. So, you know, only do it if you're really passionate about it and you're wanting to, you know, build a community, build your channel, learn some things. Don't just go into it thinking that, you know, you're going to get rich. So, I mean, I'm sure it's pretty much the same for you guys as well.
Yeah, yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. Like, what is there, 200,000 podcasts or something like that? And they all can't make money. Like, it's just, and I would assume there'd be a million different YouTube channels. And so, like, what you're competing against is, you know, is legit. I do have one question actually about that. When you were younger, did you enjoy creative writing or, you know, literature in some, like, form?
Absolutely hated it.
Yeah, right. So where do you think this creative process, the drive for the creative process came from?
I'm not actually sure. Like, I mean, like, there's been numerous times when I've, you know, made videos and, you know, terrible videos. I've never deleted a video as well. So if you want to go back to the YouTube channel and watch, you know, how bad some of the videos are, like, you can go back. I've kept them all up.
Oh, right. So you're more interested in creating video content.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then your secondary interest is sports cards, and so you've just meshed those two together.
I'd say more number one would be sports cards. The video content comes second, but then it was more the fact that, like, I wanted to just see how I would go running a full, like, a YouTube channel. And again, I had times where I thought, why am I doing this? I'm pretty much ready to quit the YouTube channel because it's not giving me anything. I'm just taking too much time out of my own life. But
yeah.
Again, I just try to remember to, you know, I think it's a great thing to remember just generally to, you know, think of the process and not to look at the outcome sort of thing. So I do enjoy the process of recording videos, coming up with content, but then, you know, when you look at your views and all that sort of stuff, your subscribers, sometimes that can get into your own head, but I think I'm past that now.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
How many videos are you up to now?
Oof, I actually do not know. I'd say full length videos, maybe 150, could be wrong there, yeah, honestly.
So you've been smashing them out quicker than we've been doing podcasts then.
Yeah, initially I was doing a video every third day.
Yeah, right.
So obviously when you're doing a video every third day, your content, you know, your brain's going to run out of content to think of. But now I think I'm about one video a week. At times, like right now, I've got a backlog of content, which is great. So I'll probably post 2 to 3 times a week leading into Christmas. But I do feel like the content that I am posting now is much easier than the stuff that I was posting at the start, in terms of just like mail days, you know, me going through bargain boxes, me recording at shows. Like, that stuff's very easy to do compared to me maybe coming up with something and then, you know, researching about something,
collecting
and then coming
facts
up with a script
and fact checking it. Yeah, that is a total pain. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the whole process is much, much more efficient for me now, which is good. Yeah.
All right. So talk to us about your card shop and your hobby hangout stall, your eBay page, and then move on to your boxes after that.
So last Sunday, at the time of recording, we had the Hobby Hangout. It was the fourth Hobby Hangout in Melbourne. Pretty ridiculous considering, you know, the last couple of years, like how often they've been run and how good they are. So it was my first time setting up there. I've set up a couple of times at the Melbourne Card Fair, which is a smaller, more, I don't know, it's a smaller show, but it's also good. Like, I do recommend to anyone in Melbourne, if you're down in Melbourne, go check out both shows.
Yeah.
Melbourne Card Fair, a little bit smaller, but cheaper to get in, cheaper to set up at, but you can find some nice deals and also sell some cards.
Yeah.
So Hobby Hangout last Sunday was good. If I had to compare it to obviously the Melbourne Card Fair what I've set up at, I've always been transparent in terms of how much I've made and all that sort of stuff. Put it on the YouTube channel as well.
Yeah, okay.
Last time at the Hobby Hangout was my biggest show, but I also was able to sell a new product there. If you guys don't follow me at all, I've got a new card case, which I've come out with. So that helped me in terms of sales. But in terms of card sales, it was very comparable to the Melbourne Card Fair, which I was a little bit disappointed about considering hobby hangout tables are around 3 to 4 times the price of Melbourne Card Fair's tables. And to only have cards be a little bit more than the Melbourne Card Fair in terms of how much I sold was a little bit disappointing. But I think at the end of the day, it's more the economy, all that sort of stuff, the timing. I don't know. It's hard to really kind of work out what went wrong, but I guess you'd have to ask a few other sellers there how they went.
Yeah, so like, why don't we just sort of work through, because you've just said a lot of different things there, so why don't we just work through that a little bit? Why don't we do a bit of a hobby hangout recap? Because I think, you know, it's a great time to do it. Yeah. And so I think you were speaking about maybe you were expecting more sales. Is that, talk to us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think it's more talking to people that have set up at both shows, and then, you know, people, you know, typically, like from what I've heard, Melbourne Card Fair, a good number to kind of aim for if you're a dealer is around $2,000. So I've spoken to a few people who have done both and, you know, have sold $2,000 at the Card Fair, and they've said at the Hobby Hangout they've done five figures. So, you know, that gets planted in your own head and you're like, ooh, this could be a big show. Like, I'm not expecting five figures, but maybe, you know, anywhere from 7, 8.
Half of that or a third of that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, wasn't anywhere near that, but was still more than the Melbourne Card Fair. So I think that sort of expectation was a bit, probably wasn't the best. But then I also look at all the exposure, the marketing, all that sort of stuff that you get, which is fine. So I think that was more it for me.
So I would say the three common things that I heard at a lot of tables were people weren't buying and they weren't trading, they were just selling. And the number of times that I heard that at tables, like, I've lost count of that. So talk to me as a table holder, why do you think people were saying that very consistently throughout the show?
Again, maybe a little bit of fear. I'll be honest, me personally, I wasn't going out to buy or trade as much. I'm not a massive trader. I think I'm not the best thinker, quick thinker when it comes to coming up with values and coming up with a fair value and all that sort of stuff. I did buy a fair few cards as a dealer, but not too much. I wasn't going out and saying I'm buying a bulk collection and, you know, let's go through this and comp this. I think for me, it wasn't more the fact that I was fearful of the market. I just think, you know, with me and Jazz, my wife, it's kind of hard, even as a, you know, two people on a table, when you've got that many people there. Let's say someone comes up with like a you know, 20 cards and like, all right, I want to comp it out, and then you're trying to work out the price, and it's like other people are trying to, you know, buy your cards as well. I think that was kind of more it for me.
Yeah.
You know, whether looking into the future, whether I'd have to just get another person with me just to, you know, help manage the table.
So, but this is a perfect time for us to thread in our sponsor. So EJ Cards, they've sponsored us from the word go. They've given us so much help and support. Jules said that exact thing word for word. I'm not here to try and buy people's cards. It is I'll beep out what he said, an effing nightmare. If you want to come and sell cards to us, come down to the shop.
Yeah.
So I think that sentiment is not held just by you. That's held by other people. And they are probably, what, 5 times, 6 times bigger than you, and they still struggle to buy and to sell at the same time. So I don't think you're by yourself with that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I even spoke to Dale at Cherry the day after, and obviously Cherry are probably, they probably would be the biggest buyers. And
they had two people just sitting there buying the whole time.
Yeah, and that's them at every card show, but he was saying that they didn't really buy that much. Whether people wanted, you know, prices from 3 to 4 months ago, or whether, I don't know. I don't know if it was, I don't think it's them. I think it's more people wanting more for their cards, but unfortunately they're not going to get the number that they want. But
I think it is tricky when you look at comps and comps are down and then they offer you 60% of that. So
absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I can understand why people wouldn't want to do that. A couple of times, like, I've sold to Cherry, and actually I felt like I've gotten pretty, with the correct expectation in mind, I've gotten a good deal. And I've actually tried to trade them cards for sealed product, and then they wouldn't do that. So that's like the one thing where maybe what you're talking about a little bit too, it is sort of hard to comp things on the fly, and it is easier just to deal with cash.
Absolutely. And I think another thing as well, I've noticed, you know, people will complain if it's not just Cherry that does this. There's obviously a lot of dealers that do this. People want to sell their cards, and as a buyer, you know, they want to pay 60, 65%, 70%.
Yeah.
And I think people think like, well, you know, like why can't I get, you know, 90, like minus eBay fees? And I used to think to myself, yeah, a few years ago, like, why would I sell my cards to you sort of thing? But at the end of the day, people are there to make money as well. And that effort of listing a card, trying to find a buyer for that card, it is worth that 15 to 20%. So I think as well as a buyer, for me personally, this is where I struggle as well. I don't want to lowball someone and say, I'm only going to pay you 65, 70% of your card, because then I'm worried about what they're going to think about me. And I think that might be just more my issue, but I think that's what they probably do well. It's they don't really care. They're happy to just, you know, offer that price.
Yeah, sure. But once you're a million-dollar business, you've done, what, 50,000 deals. You're past that stigma of
absolutely.
That. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I'm 100% all on board when, yeah, they might have to offer a lower percentage, just because, yeah, again, they've got to go through the effort of finding the buyer, going through eBay, minusing the eBay fees, all that sort of stuff. So I'm all on board on that. There's actually a great YouTube channel, Baseball Card Collector, Investor Dealer. I've stuffed up the ordering of that, but there's a few videos that he does where he goes through some lot deals, and he's very specific in terms of telling people what he pays. And he's a big time sort of dealer. He's quite respected in the YouTube community. I think people like how transparent and fair he is. And I've seen some of his videos when he goes through like bulks and commons and that sort of stuff. He like will offer like 50%. And then for the higher end stuff, he obviously goes a little bit higher. So I think that's very interesting to watch, because it kind of makes you understand that, like, yeah, at the end of the day, the person that's buying has to go through that work as well. They're not just buying it for their PC and they don't care what they pay. It's like they probably want to make some money as well and go through that effort. So
100%, yeah.
I'm truly understanding of all that, so that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Talk to us about the boxes that you've been selling, because I'm actually quite interested in this as a concept in Australia. Buying good protection for your cards is quite difficult. And I'd take that point so much further that actually a company got born out of that. So the Palms Off Gaming boys, they saw there was such a hole in the market there that you couldn't get good quality stuff. You couldn't get it into Australia. And if you did, you know, you're paying all that high shipping fees. And then realistically, you're a little bit limited to what Ultra Pro and maybe BCW if you wanted to, you know, stretch out for a little bit. So I think that market has changed since they've come into the market. But I definitely want to hear your thoughts about, obviously, your product. So talk to us about your product first of all, and then where that sort of fits into the market, because this is a really interesting conversation.
Yeah. I don't know how we go through it. So I think I was always after these cases. I don't know if I've got one behind me, actually. So these are the one row boxes.
So keep it in mind, this will go up as a podcast. So the more descriptive words is the better. Yeah.
You know, just a nice little frame, I guess, a little bit more sturdier. So obviously a lot of people, the more common case here for carrying your cards here, your Bunnings cases, and look, they're fine. I've got nothing against them. I just think for me personally, they look a little bit tacky. And Zion cases are very big in America. You see pretty much everyone at card shows, they're carrying these cases around. So they're basically just like a heavy duty sort of case that don't look as tacky, no offense to Bunnings, as those cases. And they can carry your graded cards, one touches, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
These are quite secure. So my ones have a combination lock that you can set personally. But yeah, for me personally, when I was trying to find a case, I didn't like the look of the Bunnings ones. I've seen other alternatives. And then, you know, I tried to import a Zion case myself. I think it was over $200 just to buy it. And then to import it, who knows, could have been like $40 or $50. And then I even tried getting another company to sponsor me. But again, they weren't opening their doors up to Australia. Because at the end of the day, we're an island. So it's very hard to get stuff here that is bulky. So I got quite frustrated with that.
Shipping is ridiculous out to here from the US though, like particularly for stuff like that. Like I don't know the exact numbers, but what you're saying to me is not shocking me by any means at all. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think initially I was just like, you know, how can I get this product? And yeah, luckily again, I was able to come into contact with a supplier and then, you know, was able to get them wholesale here. So yeah, it cost me a fair bit of money, but I think having this product here in Australia will fill a need for a lot of people. And then again, going back to the Hobby Hangout, was the first time. I actually only got the case about a week before the Hobby Hangout. Didn't get to do too much marketing. I'd spoken about it on the YouTube channel a little bit. Had people saying they were keen on lots of the stuff. Did sell pretty well at the Hobby Hangout, which is good, and then was able to even get a few, maybe like three or four customers that didn't watch the YouTube channel or know who I was that looked at the cases and thought like, wow, these are pretty nice. Like, yeah, I'm going to buy one. So I think that was really nice. So hopefully
you didn't have them that well positioned on your table though. And I'm saying that in a kind way. Like, so the fact that you got people cold calling, you know, coming up to you to buy them, I'll say that's excellent. Yeah. And that just shows again, like the hole in the market, and then you've brought in a good product and, you know, put it in there. So
yeah. And again, I think being a one-man show as well has been hard. So I'm still working on marketing, how I'm going to list it, how to ship it, all that sort of stuff. But I think right behind me is a very, again, on the podcast, you can't see it, but behind me, I've got like a box that I'm shipping out tomorrow. So it's going to work out how much postage will be, but hoping to keep the Hobby Hangout prices and then just add shipping. So
yeah, sweet.
It'll be, I think, $150, including shipping for the three row. And then the one row will be $100, including shipping. So that's still way cheaper than importing it from America. And then probably, I think it's still cheaper than anything you find in Australia, especially with a combination lock as well. So I think people like the added sort of, yeah, function of setting your own combination lock. Maybe makes it a little bit more proper and secure. So yeah, that was more something that I was able to put out to the Instagram followers because I was able to get a sample out. Which was a latch lock. People said they wanted the combination lock and then was able to get that one in. And I think people like the combination lock a little bit better.
I think price is important, but I think if you get the actual product right and the quality right, because I think what you spoke about before with like the different boxes and the Bunnings stuff, like there isn't really great options out there. And I think most people sort of make do. Like, and other ones that people buy too is the ones from Super Cheap Auto. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. So
I bought metal briefcases off eBay and then put sort of padding around it and then made my own dividers. Like that's what I did for mine. And
yeah,
it's okay, but I don't think it's fantastic for carrying around, you know, high value cards or even really transporting them around. It's more just sitting on my shelf. And then when I want to flick through my cards, you know, that's how I sort of do that.
Absolutely. And also because it's quite a sturdy product as well. Like, you know, when it is filled up, it can be quite heavy. So people have asked about adding more rows and lots of stuff. I'll see in the future, but people have spoken about their bigger cases and bringing out card shows. You don't want to be lugging around a massive case filled with cards the whole day. So I think for now, I'm happy with one and three rows. Potentially might get a two row in the future. You know, maybe.
So stupid question.
Customize. Yeah.
What's the difference between a one and a three row? Is that is the physical size of the case different? Because they looked pretty similar to me, or as I didn't understand that properly.
Yeah, so one row will fit around 40 to 43 PSA slabs. The three row will fit around 92, 93-ish PSA slabs. Right,
so it's almost three times as big then. Is that what you mean? Sure. Yeah.
I do think the three row is better for more like your trade nights because, I mean, I had my three row at the Hobby Hangout and it was fine carrying around all that sort of stuff. So I think it's fine for bring it to a card show if you want to. But I do think the one row is better for a card show because you can fill it up, you can carry it around quite fine. I think a three row is great for like a trade night because you want to bring your whole collection, have it on the table, displaying everything. That's great. But again, I don't think the three row is that heavy at all. So yeah, I think either one's fine. I did have my good friend Andrew who bought both. And then he just obviously will have different uses for either one. But yeah, just depends.
So yeah, are you trying to directly compete with Palms Off Boys, or is it more? Are you trying to fit into a different lane in this space?
Fit in differently. I'm all on board with Palms Off. Like I use so many of their products. I don't think they actually sell the case, from what I know. I have seen a couple others in Australia. But yeah, I still think I'm the cheapest, so hopefully I can stay that way.
We have a new sponsor supporting the show. It is The Bang Man, who is a new startup and have been operating since June this year, delivering a variety of hobby packs in a single box at an affordable price. So far, they've delivered some huge hits. The biggest one they've pulled so far is a Steph Curry Signatures Gold Auto /10, which came out of the July edition. Some comps have been rounded up to about 15k AUD, which was verified by Cardletter. So if you're not familiar with what the Bangman is and what their product is offering, it's basically an assortment of hobby packets put into a box at an affordable buy-in. You can then open a variety of different hobby packs. Some of the advantages of buying into a product such as this is that you can sample a whole bunch of different products. Another way to think of it is doing your own break at home. The advantage of the Bangman's product is you are purchasing sealed unsearched hobby packs as opposed to a single card repack product that has a huge range in value. Just to make the clear delineation between the Bangman's product and any traditional repack, when you buy into a Bangman product, you are getting the guarantee of the Panini seal and then all of the hits then come out of sealed products. So all the numbered cards, if appropriate for the product, rookie patch autographs, signature cards, and of course those super short prints and case hits. Another key point for the Bangman product is that they have an assortment of different hobby packs in a custom box at two different price points, one being a gold edition and the other being a silver edition. Each month, the Bangman changes up the pack so it's not the same constant lineup. For listeners of our podcast, we have an exclusive deal for you. Use promo code YouCan'tComp This to get a $15 discount off your next purchase. Find the Bangman on Instagram, the.bang.man. And on Facebook, The Bangman. Thank you so much, Amir and Team Bangman. The first thing we need to talk about is your Houston Rockets, because I feel like in the last 12 months, I've been, I wouldn't say hypercritical, but I've had very little time for what they did last season. I thought that was just atrocious, and I'm sticking by that. And then my initial thought this year was that it was just going to be more of the same. And I think, what are we into the season? This maybe 16 games in, 17 games. And maybe after four or five games already, that thought process had begun to flick around in my head. Like, you could tell, even after four games, they were a lot more competitive than what they were last year. And then after, what, 17, you know, 16 games, they've got a positive winning record now, haven't they? Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe plus one or plus two over the 500.
So. Which is a massive deal. Even if, you know, they lose the next 15 games in a row, I think you can still look at this season, I think, as a like an overall positive compared to last year. So I think obviously the coaching is a really big deal. Jalen Green, his shot selection has definitely improved. Dare I say it, his defensive rotations have improved.
100%, yeah.
He's putting Fred VanVleet is a winner. Like, I think that's all you need to say about him. That's easy. Dylan Brooks, as much as I think the guy's an absolute clown, has been playing his role really well. Which is a clown, but also, you know, a defender, fills in gaps, you know, where's needed. And then I think the next one to talk about is Şengün. And maybe we can save Şengün to last, because I think that's probably the, you know, really the big story about this team. But you're a massive Houston fan. Where are you sitting with these guys?
Oh, mate, the last two, 3 years has been, you know, even when Harden was on the team the last couple of years, it was hard to watch. Even when he was playing with Westbrook. Then we had the John Wall, Victor Oladipo year. It was hard times as a Houston fan, honestly. And, you know, last season, there was a lot of excitement. Kevin Porter Jr., Alperen Şengün, Jabari
Just to
Smith.
Cut you off for 2 seconds, though, having a dip on Oladipo, I actually will defend them for that. The John Wall thing, did they get an asset when they traded for him?
Well, I actually can't remember. I don't know if it was a...
Because if they picked up an asset, I'm okay with that. You know what I mean? Like...
Was it Westbrook for Wall in the end? I mean, I don't know. but yeah, I don't know. Last season was, you know, a little bit of excitement having a young team. I didn't actually mind Steven Silas, but look, I've always said this with NBA teams. No matter how great your young talent is, you need people there to mentor them. Last season, we had Eric Gordon. I love Eric Gordon, but then obviously he wanted to leave. I can't even remember who we had after that. I think we had Boban. And Boban's actually been great for our locker room. He's been great on every team he's been on.
Yeah.
But now this season, you got Fred VanVleet. You got Dylan Brooks. People love the rag on Dylan Brooks, but he's played his role perfectly.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
At the end of the day, you need those people on your team and in the NBA. Like, you need that alternative personality. And I think at Memphis, obviously, was a little bit too much towards the end. But
You can't have 12, 20-year-olds in a locker room, though. I think that's the key point there. And they definitely addressed that. Yeah.
Absolutely. And then we've also got Jeff Green as well. Aaron Holiday's been playing very well.
Yeah.
But to be fair, this the one thing that's been actually really disappointing as a Houston fan and as an Aussie as well, Jock Landale, I thought would be the perfect backup for Sengun. And it was also quite annoying because, you know, not saying this, but, you know, a lot of people might think that Americans are ignorant. And when Houston did sign Jock Landale to that contract, everyone's like, oh, who is this guy? Like, he's terrible. But as an Aussie, we love Jock Landale. We love his effort. We know he's a high motor player, high energy. We'll do all the dirty stuff for you. And I was like, this guy's going to be unbelievable in Houston. Just being the backup, we don't expect too much of him. And he's just been, honestly, could be one of our worst players this season. I'm thinking it might just be his ankle injury. Obviously had a severe ankle injury that kept him out of the Worlds, I think, that he got kept out of. I can't remember. He had a massive ankle injury in the preseason. So maybe he's just recovering from that, but he's looked really slow this season, which has been annoying as an Aussie and as a Houston fan.
Yeah. So just dig a little bit deeper into Udoka, though, because that's something else that like, you have to totally fine. Like talk about, you know, the guys on the court, but
yeah,
talk to us about Udoka. Like why is he a better coach than Silas? Because I actually don't think Silas did a bad job. Can I be honest with you? I think you give 35 other coaches that roster he had last year, and I would say that the outcome is going to be the same 33 or 34 times. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that team was, that was a tough roster to manage, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think also another thing we didn't say was Kevin Porter Jr. was the point guard last season. And whilst he did play well, he's not a true point guard. So he was looking for his own shot.
Yeah. He's
looking for his own shot. Jalen Green's looking for his own shot.
Yeah.
No one wants to play team basketball, but yeah, again, I didn't mind Steven Silas the first couple of seasons. Again, I'll give him a bit of a leash. I thought he always talked quite well. Obviously, his dad was a great coach, Paul.
Yeah.
I just think he's too nice. And I think when you've got young players who need to be molded and have some discipline, you can't have someone that's too nice. So obviously, Ime Udoka's been well known for that 1 year in Boston a couple of years ago where he was obviously quite tough on everyone, and obviously made his mistakes. And I think he's just been really good at pulling aside, like a Jalen Green who probably thinks he's the number one option, but now has to contend with Fred VanVleet, Alperen Sengun, even Dylan Brooks. He can put up 20 shots a game if he wants to, and just telling him that, hey, you don't need to be averaging 20 to 25 points a game for us to win. You just need to, take good shots, play. Have some effort on defense and make the right pass. And I think that's exactly what he's been doing.
Yeah.
His shooting numbers are still pretty similar to last season. But again, I've watched most of Houston's games this season, and he's making the right pass. He's playing defense, but there are times obviously where it hasn't been the best, but hopefully that irons out throughout the season. But definitely happy where he is this season compared to last season.
So I think the one thing that we haven't done this podcast is really any card values, which is basically our bread and butter. So I think we need to get on this a little bit. Jalen Green, silver PSA 10, last sold for $188.50. Is this a buy or hold or a sell for you at that price?
For me personally, again, I wanted to be a massive Jalen Green guy. He's part Filipino. I'm Filipino. See, we're looking for Filipino players to really idolize. Right now we're looking at Kai Soto. So we look for these, even if they've got a little bit of Filipino in them, we're looking for them. But I don't know. I'd more, if I had his cards, I'd hold. But if I didn't have his cards, I probably wouldn't be looking. I just don't think, I think the team's Sengun's in the future. So I just don't want Houston to sign him to a massive extension. I don't know if he's going to be that player. I like him, but I just like Sengun way more.
Yeah, sure. All right. So I think that's going to be a really good segue into Sengun. But I think I was really worried about Jalen Green because of all the hype that came out with him. And people, in my opinion, were dropping just crazy money in this guy. And I was just like, this guy's just a gunner. He's a highlight reel, and then people were making the Tracy McGrady comparisons, and they were making the, Grant Hill comparisons and all that type of stuff. And I just didn't see it. I tried my hardest and I couldn't see it. Whereas this year, I can see a little bit of Grant Hill, and I can see some Tracy McGrady in this kid, and the defensive effort is there. So I think for me, I've come around a long way on this kid. And so looking at the last 2 years, he's down 75%. So, you know, in terms of an asset that's in distress or, you know, an asset that's depreciated, you know, he's, you know, how much more can it go down? Really interesting though. So Card Ladder puts him overvalued at 2.5%. So if you do believe that metric, which I'm still, you know, I'm not 100% on, you know, do you wait a little bit longer? The thing for me is I think I would be looking at this guy, but I would more be thinking of this in terms of like in the next 12 months, what's going to happen to him. And I probably actually think he's going to go down a little bit more in the next 12 months, even though he's playing better basketball and the Houston Rockets are going to be better. And I think a large portion of that is going to what you're just saying there with Şengün. So you're a Houston Rockets fan. How high are you right now on Şengün, and where do you put him in the NBA's elite?
In the NBA's elite. I mean, that's crazy to even think, you know, people are even discussing that. But I think, you know, obviously he has his faults still. He still makes some dumb plays. I think the first couple of seasons, you know, fans, including myself, were worried that obviously Şengün offensively is great, but can you have a championship with such a poor defender?
Yeah.
He obviously looked quite slow, but, you know, whether he's worked on that in the offseason where it's a little bit of Ime, maybe they've changed the defensive scheme a little bit.
They've definitely changed their schemes. And,
yeah,
you know, do you make the argument that they've changed it to suit him, or is this the team around him better? So then he's also better defensively. You know what I mean? Like, he's not been put in those terrible situations. Like last year, that was a very difficult team to, you know, succeed on. I think that's a reasonable thing to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's why I think the team around him for sure. So he's actually been playing better defense. You know, played against Jokic a couple of days ago. Probably didn't defend him too well, but I did listen to the post-game interview. I think Jokic got like 35 and 15, very typical Jokic game. But he did say that the Rockets were really trying to make Jokic score and not have him playmake as much, because they think Denver's at its best when he's just playmaking. But when they're making the primary scorer, they're not playing as well. So other than that, I think he's been playing much improved defense, which has been good. I'm not expecting him to be an all-defensive player, but, you know, have a little bit of effort. And I think having someone next to him like Jabari Smith, who seems like he really cares about the team. I think that was the one thing coming out from college for him. It's like, you know, his potential may not be the highest, but he seems like a really good locker room guy. And it was great that we had Jalen Green and all these sorts of players come in, but it's like, we need some locker room guys now. So that's why I like the Jabari Smith pick. And then obviously, yeah, he's got his team around him. Dylan Brooks is a great wing defender. Fred VanVleet, probably not so much, but then they're actually having some effort now with Jalen Green. So I think the whole team around has just been great for Şengün. Probably masked a little bit of his liability as a defensive player. But yeah, offensively, they're running through him way more now. I think every Houston fan's been crying out for it.
Yeah,
it's not like a Jokic where it's completely through him, but you definitely see players going through him. And I think the best thing about it is in the clutch, they're going straight to Şengün in the post.
Yeah.
I've watched the last few games. We've had a few close ones, which unfortunately we've lost. We lost to the Clippers, lost to the Lakers. But, you know, with, what was it, like 30 seconds left, Şengün's backing down on LeBron, layup on LeBron. And to have that trust on Şengün in the post is absolutely incredible. You've obviously got other great players who could do that for you, like Fred VanVleet and Jalen Green, but to have that trust on Alperen Şengün is absolutely ridiculous. So I think it's placed a lot of faith and trust that the organization just has behind him, and his teammates have for him as well, which is good.
Yeah. Look, the thing that's really going through my mind about this guy, though, is he actually a buy? And is he a buy that you're going to hold on to for, say, 5 years? And is this the next coming of Nikola Jokic? Like, I think that's the real question at the moment with this kid. So where do you sit with that? Because the numbers are scarily comparable.
Yeah. I find it hard because he's on my team. So I love him. And, you know, you always, if you want to think about investment-wise, it is hard to kind of look at it from both sides. I mean, obviously, if you want to go the comparison to Jokic, you can, because he said it in multiple interviews that he idolizes Jokic. I think Jokic is a better shooter. I'd say Şengün's playmaking is up there, but yeah, the comparison's there. I can definitely see it. It's obviously going to be a huge step to get to where Jokic is now. Yeah, in terms of 4 to 5 years, where do I see him? It's hard. It depends on the organization as well. Like, again, they are running through Shengun at the moment, but are they going to still run with him for the next 4 or 5 years, or is Jalen Green going to say, no, nah, like, I need to step up and have more of the ball, or is he going to just leave the team? I'm intrigued about that sort of stuff. For me personally, I think it's hard. For PC at the moment, I'm still buying a lot of Shengun. It wouldn't be the worst thing to sell, because at the end of the day, he's gone up a significant fair bit in terms of his amount. So if you've made a bit of a flip, go ahead and sell.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to go too far into the playoffs. So, you know, even if we make the playoffs as well, like that's hard enough or scary enough to say in itself. So it's hard. I can't.
There's a lot of heat on this guy at the moment. Yeah, yeah. No, and that's totally fine. I think where I sort of sit at the moment is that you do have a very clear blueprint of where he could go. And it's so obvious because Jokic is in his prime and he's playing, you know, just come off a championship, two MVPs. And also the NBA has changed so that big guys like him who aren't the traditional athletic seven-footer that can protect the rim can still be a starting center and also become good enough defensively that they can win a championship. And I think that narrative probably wasn't there, 2 years ago? So I think, you know, for Shengun, that's where he comes a bit more juicy because you can see the amazing playmaking.
Absolutely. And he's just someone who adds to his game as well. So
that's right. And he's improved a lot in a very short period of time. And then you're speaking about the shooting before. I would say that's the one skill that I think can be added to people's games in, yeah, say, a 2 or 3 year period.
Yeah. If you've watched him this season as well, he's added this sort of, the Houston Rockets commentators or announcers, they call it the flamingo shot, but it's sort of this Dirk one-footed fadeaway. It's not exactly that. But
he doesn't jump though, does he? It's so weird.
Yeah, it's sort of like he faces up and then he lifts the leg up and sort of it's very weird, but he's a very unconventional player and that's just how he's always played.
Yeah.
But it does go in. It's not like the James Harden sidestep three that he had for a few games where he wasn't making it. Like, this is a shot that Shingun's actually practiced over and over and actually made during the season. So,
are you traumatized by James Harden?
I'm not actually. Actually like James Harden still. So,
okay.
I think Houston fans still like James Harden as a whole. And going back to Shengun as well, I think another thing as well that is sort of making a bit of a renaissance in terms of the NBA is obviously that center position. So, you know, a lot of people were like, maybe not sport. Yeah, you could say it's sports.
Yeah, definitely. The center position was dead. Like, they took it off the All-Star ballot.
Absolutely. Yeah exactly, yeah. That. So now you look at, you know, the best players in the NBA. You think
Embiid,
Jokic. Yeah. You think of even Giannis, if you want to call him a center as well. So I think Shengun's definitely got a place in the hobby.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that whole big man argument for me is kind of gone with really good players. So, nah, I'm all on board with Shengun.
Yeah, I still feel you haven't really answered my question that well, though. I feel like you've sidestepped it because you're kind of like, you know, I don't want to be too biased here. But I really think there has to be at least some conversation around, you know, where is this guy going to be in 5 years? And I think also too, where he's sitting at the moment, like the prices are still low. So there is that sort of low risk, high reward scenario that sort of plays out here. And
yeah,
I'm definitely going to press you and ask you one more time. So what do you think the probability is that he wins an MVP? How about that?
Whew. Wow, that is that is pretty ridiculous. You've actually stumped me here. He can win one. He can win one just on his trajectory and how much I know he wants to improve each season.
Yeah.
I think he has
That's a big part, by the way. The mental application and, you know, that desire to improve, that's a really big deal. So in your opinion, he's got the right attitude and the right work ethic to get there?
Yeah, there's never been any reports of him being terrible in the locker room or anything like that, which, yeah, has been good. I think a lot of Houston big men do this, but, you know, trained with Hakeem Olajuwon, worked with that footwork, was also the Turkish League MVP. So
that's something that matters to me, actually, by the way. Yeah, the MVP of, like, European leagues, that's really important. Yeah.
He's no slouch. So yeah. I was really skeptical actually coming out of the draft. I thought a back to the basket sort of player, that never really works in the NBA anymore. But
yeah,
it's actually worked out. So no, I think he can win the MVP. Whether Houston, as a whole, can support him to win the MVP remains the question for me. But I think if everything goes right, I think he can win the MVP.
Yeah.
Maybe 5 to 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. So the thing I would like to see more is playing the high post, because I think if you speak – well, if you think about it and we speak about the comparison to Jokic, I think that's the big difference, like where they sort of position themselves on the court. And look, this is just my opinion and there's nothing to support this. I just think the NBA game flows better through the high post than the low post. So if we can sort of put that sort of vision into his passing and play, like, because I think there's also something to be said too about a big guy getting the ball, rebounding it and bring it down the court, and the guards to sort of play off him. And I think that's why the Michael Porter Jr. like, this is a really deep segue now, but I think that's why Michael Porter Jr. is so good in Denver, because like there was a meme up this week that he'd scored 63 straight points without an assist. But that doesn't matter when you've got a big guy like Joker passing the ball around and he can just do what he does best, which is gun, you know. Like, I love that so much. So, and I think, you know, maybe the Houston comparison is Jalen Green is the Michael Porter Jr. in this instance, or, you know, so
anyway. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I think we should do some really quick Sengun prices and we move on to our next topic. I'll just run some off. I couldn't find him on Card Ladder, which is really disappointing for me because I think he would be just like a straight line up. So I'll just run off a couple and then you tell me whether you buy, hold, or sell it. So Donruss Optic Premium Box Set. So that's the sort of the scopey one out of Optic, PSA 10, $100.
I would, that's a good price. I don't think the premium box sets are too loved by collectors, but it is a good price at $100. I probably wouldn't buy it though, just that specific set more so.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. Red Cracked Ice Prism, PSA 10, $145 USD. So you've got the color match going on there.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't buy it. Again, more the specific card. I'd be probably trying to get his autos. This is more in terms of the hobby in general. I would probably be trying to get more of his on-card autos or, yeah.
All right. Okay, so I don't believe this is on-card. This is a sticker. So PSA 10 select, numbered to 299, rookie autograph, 450 Canadian. So that's like, I think that's around sort of 550 Aussie, maybe even a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be selling that.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Yeah.
It's hard to compare him to Jokic. Obviously, you know, with Jokic and stuff like that, like, he didn't have as many sets. So I think about that sort of stuff long term. If you can get the short term flip, go for it. But yeah, with the amount of Sengun autos and he signs in his second year as well, it's hard for me to really justify paying that price long term for like a sticker auto.
Yep.
I think that's more my thinking behind it.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think that's a sensible thing to say here too, because I think he's so hot at the moment, it's almost easy to get caught up in the hype. Yeah.
Absolutely. I've been caught up. I think I've bought like 3 Sengun autos in the past 2 weeks, but again, it's more for PC anyway, so I don't really care.
Yeah. All right, last one, because this is a really good one actually. So this is the blue 75th anniversary card. His rookie prism card, PSA 10, $138.50.
Wow.
So those aren't particularly SSPs, but they seem to sell, that particular print sells pretty well.
I would probably sell because I just don't like
that
parallel.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But again, that's more personal.
No, that's what I'm here to ask you, man. Like, definitely, yeah. All right. So I think we should move on. And this is not particularly in the run sheet, but we have to talk about this. We did talk about this off air. It was the Josh Giddey situation. So allegations have come to light on the judge, jury, and executioner, which is Twitter. And it became that much of a news story that actually made it to the Channel 9 news. So if we've got people listening overseas, we have 4 television stations that are free to air in Australia, and that's like one of them. So I also noticed today that there was some press conference questions where they directly asked him about the allegations and he basically just no commented it. So we're not going to talk about what did or didn't happen, but what we are going to talk about is his card value, because I think this is really interesting in terms of, I would say that the sentiment on Australian card pages is there's been a lot of Josh Giddey sales at the moment in terms of people unloading. So I think the early sentiment is uneasy, you know, feeling. And I think for me, this is actually quite a difficult one because I would say less than 10 shows, I was telling Adam how much I love this kid because he's doing basketball clinics for young kids and he's doing, you know, media sessions all around Australia and he's grassroots and all this type of stuff. So I think for me, this has been a really, really, you know, difficult one pill to swallow, I suppose, if the allegations are proven to be true. Yeah, where are you at with this whole Josh Giddey situation?
Absolutely agree. I think we were all excited because we'd all, you know, coming off Ben Simmons, we're just looking for the next player. And Josh Giddey was like it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Seems like, you know, he was playing for the Boomers, embraced the culture and everything like that, still coming back to Australia, doing his clinics, doing the meetups, doing the photos. And it just seems like from all reports, he's just been really good. So obviously this has been a massive shock to everyone.
Yeah,
You know, the card prices, I agree with you in there. In terms of the actual Facebook groups itself, I think you do see a lot of people panicking and just putting him up for sale. I have seen a few people that are just like, oh, this is the time to buy. So they're like,
yeah, yeah. And let's talk about that too. I think we should talk about both sides of the coin. So I think that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I've seen some people going like, this is it. I'm going to get an NTRPA of Josh Giddey. This is my perfect chance. So
yeah.
I'll give a couple of comparisons in the card hobby that I've also experienced myself personally. The first one I'll say, I don't know too much about this one as much, Juan DeFranco from baseball. So he, last year or 2 years ago, was pretty much the biggest young star.
So for reference, I know who that is, but because I'm so pure NBA, I actually have no idea what he did. So
yeah,
you can either explain it to me or you can tiptoe around it. Either is fine.
Yeah. I'm not a massive baseball fan, but I like to keep my toes in.
You do a bit of everything.
I kind of understand a little bit of it, but yeah, one of the biggest stars, young stars, he probably was the biggest young star in baseball a couple of years ago. I was actually able to snap up an order of him because everyone was saying, this is the guy you need to have, sort of thing. And it wasn't just stuff that he was doing in the minors. It was like he'd actually performed in the MLB. Like, he's doing some crazy stuff. So I thought, I'll get an auto. Like, long term, I can, you know, keep my eye on baseball in a way.
Yeah.
And then, when was it? Earlier this year, it might have been. He was put on administrative leave, I think it is, and the stuff came out that he was having an inappropriate relationship with a minor. I think it was a 13 or a 14-year-old. I can't remember the actual age.
Okay.
I think he's been reinstated. I'm not too sure, but he was off the MLB for a couple months. But anyways, going through his card prices, when that stuff came out, considering the year he was, I think he was having an all right season, but yeah, his year, it pretty much just ruined his whole reputation.
Yeah, sure.
So
was he proven guilty in that instance?
I'm not exactly sure. So,
or was he proven Twitter guilty?
Definitely Twitter guilty.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But it was very similar to the Josh Giddey stuff, except this was a relationship versus whatever Josh Giddey did. But I was just reading it on Wikipedia before because I was thinking about a comparison. And
yeah,
I think the MLB decided not to penalize him because they don't, yeah, it doesn't, I don't know, it's under their conduct or something like that. It doesn't, yeah, affect. I can't remember the exact thing. You might have to research it later on. But yeah, even then, his reputation is pretty much cooked. And then the other one I'm more familiar with is Deshaun Watson.
Can I just hold that for 2 seconds? So I've just quickly gone onto Card Ladder and looked up his all-time value. So Juan DeFranco, PSA 10, 2019 Bowman Paper Prospects. All-time high was $123. That's currently now trading at $15.
Wow.
So I think I'm sure I could find a better card that's, you know, got a bit more relevance and all that type of stuff, but basically it's just gone down 90%. So I think that's the...
Yeah, I would be looking at like his first Bowman Chrome Auto because that's just like the stuff that baseball collectors want. They want the very first Bowman Auto.
Yeah.
And I feel like that would just be... I reckon it'd be down 80 to 90% from its all-time high, just, yeah, based off what he's done. But yeah, as I was just saying as well, the Deshaun Watson comparison. His was a little bit different, but I understand this a little bit more because I'm a Houston fan. He was our QB, great player from all reports, really good human. You know, had a lot of stories about him in college, in the community, great stuff. And then some allegations came out of him that he, how do we word this for the younger people? Let's just say he was asking for I don't know how we should word this.
Lollies?
Yes. Asking for extra things that he shouldn't have for professional services. So
sure. Let's leave it like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, there were about 15 to 20 people that came out with stuff like this. So it was just a massive thing. The NFL ended up suspending him for an entire season because of the allegations. And then I don't know if he actually got suspended for the season or whether he just took time off because it was the whole investigation. But then he ended up being cleared. Then the NFL suspended him for another 12 games. He only came back last season for the last 4 or 5 games. Wasn't sure. Great. And then now he's back this season, but unfortunately ruled out for the season because of an injury. But his card price has, again, gone down massively. I think the one thing with Giddy, though, that is a plus for him is that we've got this massive Aussie sort of, yeah, we've got a lot of Aussies that are behind him. Again, with Americans, they're happy to throw him off because there's so many other players for him to follow. But with us, even with Ben Simmons, all that sort of stuff, a lot of people might not like him, but a lot of Aussies still love him, support him. I think Josh Giddy is in the same boat as well. Like, you know, whatever happens, they're going to be supporters of him for his ability on the court. So that's just how the way things are.
So with that last comment you made, I would maybe push back in a little bit of a different mindset. So I would say there's actually a bit of a difference between Ben Simmons just being a generalized bit of a wanker, right? And then as opposed to something they're doing that's potentially a criminal act. So I think you do have to sort of distinguish those two things. And then in terms of like the value not, you know, falling off down to the bottom, I would say that's, again, I'll just distinguish that between being a PC item and being, you're buying it now because you think it's going to be cheap and then you can sell it in the future. Like actually, now that you've fleshed this out a little bit more, I think it's fraught with peril, you know, having that mindset. And so I'm just looking at the Bowman Chrome autograph that you were talking about. So that sold for an all-time high of 6,000. This is for Wander Franco. It's now trading at 275 was the last trade. So that's down 80%.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, look, I don't know how much, you know, where this is at in terms of his timeline and, you know, how does his sort of pass out in terms of Josh Giddy. But, you know, I think either way, this is a really interesting case study because whether he's guilty or he's not guilty, and I swear this is like the Derrick Rose thing where, you know, Derrick Rose had that very public court case about him tying knots in contraceptives and putting him into his pocket and leaving the room, you know, all that type of stuff. Like, you know, and they're basically taught about that stuff, you know, managing it these days. And clearly Giddy's mismanaged this in such a exponentially bad way that, you know, whether he's guilty or not, I actually think this is going to really negatively affect him. Actually, that's probably where my mindset's at currently. And I've got no idea whether he's guilty or not, you know.
He's also not really having the greatest season. You know, third year, people expecting him to have a big jump with Chet in, but Chet's probably taken a bit of ball away from him. So, I mean, if you look at that aspect as well, he's not really having the best third season. And
Okay, if you put the numbers aside, have you watched much Thunder this year?
No, I haven't. Okay. I've just listened to a few podcasts and heard a few people say that Chet's been taking away from Giddy.
Like, I definitely think that his numbers are down, and I'm definitely not disagreeing with that. But I think part of that is he's just on a better team now. And actually, I thought his play's been pretty good. Like, his rebounding's been pretty decent, and defensively he's been, you know, pretty good. And, like, a couple of times he hasn't had the assist, but it's like the Tim Duncan secondary assist stat. I think if they were counting that stat, you know, he would get a couple of like secondary assists out there. Do you know what I mean? So not that I'm trying to defend Giddy in this sense, but so if we're looking at Giddy the last 3 months, he started at 250. And that's actually my recollection of the last time Adam and I touched base with him. So he's actually down to 137 at the moment. So he was already on a downward slide and then he actually went down to 102. And he's, you know, he's come back a little bit. So, I mean, that's a very quick, you know, market reaction, I suppose, is the word, isn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's very dicey. Like, I think if you've got Josh Giddy at the moment, oh, it's tough. Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're in a position to buy, but it'd either be a hold or a sell at the moment. I don't think you can buy at the moment at all.
I think if you're using the Wander Franco card, and look, I know nothing about this guy at all. I think if you're using that as a case study, then he's a sell because it's just going to keep going down. Like if you're looking at the Wander Franco, and I'm just being objective here, you know, I'm not holding any Giddy literally at all.
Same. I'm the exact same. I still think, yeah, you know, whilst we compared Ben Simmons to Josh Giddey, there are still massive, massive Josh Giddey supporters. And I think even if he's guilty or not, there will be supporters of him, because going through the chat groups and all that sort of stuff, you know, people going through it and debating it, and yeah, just reading a few things, I think no matter what happens, he will have supporters. So that's why I think even, you know, with his card prices going down, if he is guilty or anything like that, I don't think it will be as drastic as like a Wander Franco. I think it will probably be minimized because of the Aussies. But yeah, that's more my thinking.
Yeah, no, that's totally fine. So I was actually going through the notes from the last time that you came on, and I found this question from Andrew Hewitt. Talk about how Zion and Patrick Williams are great investments going into next season. So essentially, we've had 12 months to see how this would play out. Where are you at with Zion, and where are you at with Pat Williams?
I love how he led that question with talk about how they are great investments, not are they good investments sort of thing. So it's he's trying to make us.
That was a leading like statement, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Yep. Look, with Patrick Williams, I know you've been high on him. I've been high on him at various times.
Yeah.
Very disappointing this season. I think he's averaging like 6 points a game. I think he's someone that could probably flourish on a new team. I'm not sure if the Bulls are the greatest at developing their players. You know, they've had key players leave their team in the last few seasons. They've Larry Markkanen, who's obviously an all-star at the moment. Wendell Carter Jr. even. I like Daniel Gafford as well. I think one of the big things as well, obviously, has been the front office as well. The Vooch trade for Wendell Carter Jr.
That is going to go down as one of the worst trades like in history, honestly. That is going to wash them so bad.
That in itself.
Yeah.
Like, would I do Vooch for Wendell Carter Jr.? I probably would. Maybe, I don't know. Just for them to, yeah, maybe. But probably not for me, because I do like Wendell Carter. He's probably just a little bit injured too much.
No, but the Bulls gave up like a bunch of assets to a guy. And their whole idea was to get to the playoffs, which, you know, they didn't do anyway, right?
And now
the Magic have got this young prospect who's actually becoming like a very decent player. And then you're paying this guy, $25 million a year on an average to... I actually think they're this year's version of the Houston Rockets. I am so... Like, watching the Bulls for me is so difficult. I really think they're going to blow this team up. And if they get to the end of the year without making a trade, I'm going to be shocked.
Yeah. And then even... The first round pick that they gave to the Magic was Franz Wagner. So
that is ridiculous. Like, I'm just getting aggravated. Like, the more you're talking about this,
yeah. So I don't know. I just think that's I don't know, the front office development, all that sort of stuff. So yeah. I think P. Will probably could start afresh on the team. In terms of Zion, I haven't watched too much of the Pelicans this season, but obviously the Pelicans are a better team when he's playing.
So hang on a second. Buy, hold, sell Patrick Williams at the moment.
I don't know what his prices are.
So raw silvers are selling for $1.94 USD.
I mean, I'm a massive fan of buying really, really low.
Yeah.
So if you're risking $1 or $2, I would buy that.
Yeah.
If you're a Patrick Williams believer, if we're going with me, what would I do? I probably wouldn't buy. I think I'm off him.
He's 22 years of age. He's only 22 years of age, because I think that's the thing that we do need to like sort of, you know, recalibrate a little bit here. He came into the league really young. So he's 22 and he's already been in the league for 3 years.
True.
Yeah. And I think he's on it. And you've already touched on this. We both have. They're being mismanaged, you know, grossly. He's stuck behind DeRozan and LaVine. I think that's the thing. And I feel like if they clear that logjam, one of those two guys, then they'll be forced to give him, you know, a lot more responsibility. And that's sort of what I'm waiting to see happen. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that'll be very interesting. Like, even when he was drafted, I remember when he got drafted, people were quite shocked because the Bulls felt like people felt like the Bulls had reached for him.
Yeah, so, 100%. That was exactly the narrative. Yeah.
I sort of remember that going back to his draft class.
Yeah.
But I'd love to see him flourish. I also think he's very timid. So we'll see. If he has a bit more aggressiveness in his shot selection, all that sort of stuff, you know, how his stats will go. But I just probably wouldn't spend my money on P-Wheel. Oh, yeah, if you're happy to go value hunting, all that sort of stuff, it's not a bad buy. But,
No. I definitely want your opinion. So you're out on P-Wheel, so that's totally fine. So talk to me about someone on the Bulls that you would buy, because I think actually there is some interesting players here. So Kobe White is one I think we should at least mention, because his prices are just like down to nothing. And then the other one who I'm quite high on is Ayo. I think he's actually quite an interesting prospect.
I was never a Kobe White person. Yep. If you guys go back to his rookie season, he had a February, which was ridiculous, and he could have been the third highest player in terms of his card prices behind your Zion and your Jars. It was absolutely ridiculous. He was averaging like 20 points a game just before. He was actually the person when the NBA lockout happened, because of the shutdown. When the shutdown happened, everyone wanted Kobe White's stuff, because the 5 or 6 games leading into the shutdown, he averaged like 25 points a game. And then people had seen that the shutdown happened. Everyone was like, I want Kobe White. So I still remember that very well.
So but that, for me, and also how many times his cards were sent to PSA. Like he is, I'll try and pull that up now because it's insane. Yeah.
Honestly, I think his peak is like a 6 man.
Actually, this is kind of funny. So his base PSA 10 is the population's 13,000. And it's currently trading for $5.61.
Wow.
The silver has got 1,600, is currently trading for $23.
Look, honestly, when I'm looking at the roster right now, there's not anyone that's jumping out to me. I don't mind AO as well.
Yeah.
I think he just had a really good rookie season because he's a little bit older than everyone. But
okay. No, that's fine.
I don't mind Lonzo. If he's come down a lot, I don't mind him. But again, will he come back on the court?
I think he's done, man. That's it. Like, no, seriously, I think he's done. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's sort of the word on the street is that those knees are, you know, never going to be playing basketball again. Yeah.
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 So I don't know. I don't really think there's anyone on the Bulls that appeals to me.
No, that's cool.
I think that's just cool. more the team itself. Being managed by that front office. I don't think there's anyone I'd want to really go for. I wouldn't trust them.
Yeah. Okay. Zion. Talk to me about Zion.
Zion, I haven't really watched the Pelicans too much, but yeah, like I was saying before, the Pelicans are a better team when Zion plays. Last season, when you know the whole team was functioning, they were number one in the East for a fair bit, and then Zion got injured. And did they end up missing the playoffs in the end? I can't remember, or making the 8th seed.
They made the play-in, and then they were knocked out.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I haven't been watching Zion or the Pelicans at all, I'll be honest, but I like him. I think he's an all-time player if he gets his body right. Potentially he might have to go vegan for a year or so or something like that. We have to work something out on his diet. I think he's an all-time player if his body's right and he's able to get on the court and stay on the court, honestly.
Do you know the feeling I'm getting about Zion now is that, because I was an absolute Zion optimist, I feel like we're going to be saying this for the next 12 years. He's going to be good when he gets his body right and he gets his diet right. Like, I just feel like we've said that so many times now that I'm almost like, maybe this is who he is.
Yeah. And look, again, I'm not vegan, but did see that Chris Paul turned vegan over the last few seasons, and it's helped
Steve
add
Nash
to his
was
career.
Too.
Yeah. So it's helped add to their career.
Yeah.
He slimmed down a little bit. So, you know, Zion has to go vegan or something like that, or just, I don't know. Yeah. Obviously loves whatever they have in Louisiana a fair bit. So
listening to what he does in his private life, it doesn't seem like he's the type of dude that will be going vegan and doing yoga and stuff, man.
I've always joked about it with James Harden as well. I'm like, God, when James Harden goes vegan, it's going to be a whole different ball game. But again, that's just my own inside joke. I don't know. Buy whatever diet works for you. And I'm not traumatized by James Harden. He can do what he wants as well.
Okay, so your advice to Clippers fans is don't worry. You're not going to be long-term traumatized.
Nah.
So, Zion is currently trading at $460 for a silver PSA 10. Buy, hold, sell.
Probably sell. I think the silvers, there's just so many silvers that year. I would want an auto or a numbered card, honestly.
The last play we're going to talk about in tonight's episode is Trae Young. The Hawks, for me, have been interesting for two reasons. They basically gave up on John Collins for nothing. And I'm still a little bit perplexed by why they did that, because I think even if they wanted to unload him, they should have been able to get something more back than just what they got back for him. But moving that aside, is now a little bit clearer in my mind with the emergence of Jalen Johnson. I think that kid has been playing really excellent basketball. And I think a little bit the same as Şengün, I think he's got, obviously he's not the same type of body type, but I think he is a modern NBA player in the sense that he's a big body. He really can run the floor. He can do a little bit of everything in terms of rebounding, dribbling the ball. I need to really moderate the way I say this, but he almost reminds me of LeBron James' body type in a way, and the way that he can take the ball off and, you know, really run with it sometimes quite quickly. He doesn't have any of the other skill set that LeBron has, but just that one thing. So I'm quite interested in the Hawks for that reason. And then the rest of the roster, again, still makes just no sense to me at all. So the fact that you want to talk about Trae Young, I definitely want to hear about this because I still don't really know, you know, what is going on in Atlanta and yeah. So where are you at with the Hawks?
Oh, look, I don't really, haven't been following the Hawks too much. I've been following more Trae Young's prices. So,
okay. So that's totally fine, man. Talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a massive Trae Young person.
Yeah.
Obviously, sports card investor is because he's from Atlanta. There's a lot of hype about him. A lot of comparisons to Luka. Same draft class, traded for each other, all that sort of stuff.
The only thing that you can talk about Trae Young and Luka in the same sentence is they'll traded for each other. That's it. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's any comparison to those two guys at all. What's the comparison?
I think it was just people were thinking like Trae was undervalued. He was putting up 30 points a game, almost 10 assists a game. It was like, why isn't he getting the hobby love, that sort of stuff. But I think if you can look at the shooting numbers, he's just a I don't want to say a chucker, but he's just putting up low percentage shots. And he's averaging on the 40% a game at the moment, which is not great. He hasn't really been a high percentage shooter throughout his whole career. Look, the reason I wanted to talk about his prices more so is I think tracking his autos, because I have sold a couple over the last 6 months, I think his prices are very inflated at the moment. I would be trying to sell if you can, but I don't know if you can because a lot of the autos that I go through on 130point.com are just massively shielded at the moment. So I don't know. Again, we're going to ethics here as well. Like, should you be selling a card at a price which is obviously shield? It's hard. I think his prices, when you compare him to a player like a Jason Tatum, a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think his prices are way too high. So I don't know. If you pull up some of his card prices, his autos, I think they're pretty ridiculous to compare and look at.
So I think I'm going to break down what you just said then into two parts. So I think one part is Trae Young is overpriced, and the other part is that there's potentially a group of people out there who have invested very heavily into Trae Young and they're shilling up his cards to protect their investment. Is that a reasonable thing to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that if you then break that down further and say, well, I actually can't control the shill bidding, I'm going to put in one single bid, and that's the price that I want to pay for my card. And if I miss out on it, then I miss out and I'm going to move on with in mind that maybe the prices that are happening at the moment is derived from shilling and it's actually not his true value. So I think that's like the way I'm going to like pass that out. Then the second thing for me is where does Trae Young fit into the all-time players list? And if you then compare Trae Young rookie cards to say, like, what's a reasonable comparison for a point guard of that same skill set? I know Kevin Johnson, who originally played for the Cleveland Cavaliers and then was very famous playing with Charles Barkley. I know their games are two completely different games, but Kevin Johnson's actually not in the Hall of Fame.
Hmm.
I don't see any scenario where Trae Young ends in the Hall of Fame.
I can see him getting in there just based of statistics, and I just think it's very easy to get into the Hall of Fame. But
well, Kevin Johnson's not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, is he a winning player though? That's what I think of with Trae Young. But I don't know. I've pulled up a couple of listings here, just looking at his Prism Auto PSA 9. This isn't even the silver. $755 US. This is just the base auto as well. And yeah, you look at the bidders; they're all private. Yeah, and then another one here, Obsidian RPA out of 50, BGS 9, going for $1,080 US.
So we've already spoken about on the show about Prism Autos, like they're not really that collectible. People don't by Prism for the autos. And then Obsidian is what, a C grade set, maybe a D grade set, actually, at best. By the time you get through Flawless, NT, Impeccable, Select, Noir, you know, it's sitting down in that sort of, it's not that far away from Flux, really.
Yeah. I would just be very weary. Again, if you're trying to buy his stuff, just know that, you know, potentially in a year or two, you know, whether they stop shilling and all this sort of stuff, that there's potentially a chance for you to lose 50-60% just like that. Like, and even I was just reading...
Well, particularly if they're shilling their own cards up too, man. Like, if they're in a group and they're working together to shill these cards up, then you could potentially lose more because they're not going to be then buying those cards back.
Yeah, and I was even just reading, because you linked me this post of the buy, hold, sell, and Jono Michaels is obviously, you know, big in the card community. He's said himself, you know, Trae Young, his prices on lots of the desired current day insets are relatively high compared to other players of the same ilk.
Yeah.
Kabooms, blank slates, etc. So,
yeah.
I mean, if he's noticing it as well, there's something going on out there, but it's hard to work out who's behind this all. But it's definitely something, it's a trend I've noticed over the last, I'd say, 4 to 5 months. So I would just be very, very weary when it comes to Trae Young if you're wanting to buy him. And if you have his cards and you want to sell it, again, I don't know the ethics behind all of this, you know, because it's obviously not their fault that it's being shielded, but I'd be trying to offload it, honestly. It's not going to stay that high, considering his play as well.
Is there any, like, high fluctuations where the, just say you list your Trae Young card, but that doesn't get shielded up? Or is this group just shilling up every single Trae Young at the moment?
I'm looking now. There are some that have, so they have some that have ended, like, so that exact same Prism PSA 9, I don't think this one's shielded, but it ended at $280. So if 750, I think we said before, to 280, it's a huge drop off. And then, you know, get someone.
That fits that narrative, though.
Yeah. But I think when I was looking at it 4 or 5 months ago, it was almost every card was being shielded because I had a card that was being consigned and it got relisted and maybe 5 or 6 times because it was just getting shielded. And it was just ridiculous. But eventually it got paid. So I got lucky in the end. But yeah, I mean, like, look at that. That's like what? 750 to 280. It's a huge drop off. And all it takes is one person to, you know, put up a specific comp and just be like, oh, this sold for $720. I'm going to sell it on the comps at $550 US. But really, it goes for $280. So
yeah,
you're already losing $270 there. So I think you've got to be very careful with Trae Young.
Yeah.
Do your research. Don't just go in and just rely on someone being like, oh, I'm selling this 20% on the comps. Like, it's a great deal. Like, actually try and see if these auctions were shielded.
Yeah.
And see if you can find another comparison of a card that's not shield. So that's what I'd probably say.
I think that's a fantastic take and like, frankly, very wise words. And I think just a very practical way to stay happy in the hobby. Final thoughts for tonight, Matt?
No final thoughts. You know, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Go check me out on all my socials.
Drop your social handles, man. Like, don't be shy.
Matt's Card Shop, Matt's Card Case, I'm working on that. But if you want to stay updated on the case release, we'll hopefully start packaging and sending them out very soon. But, you know, worst case, you can just message me on my own, Matt's Card Shop, Insta. It's hard to run multiple Instagrams on top of my actual personal one at the moment. Probably working on the YouTube channel probably the most at the moment, so I would appreciate if you go check it out. But, yeah, no, I appreciate you having me on as always.
Yeah. It's absolutely our pleasure, man. So everyone, thank you so much for listening and we really appreciate all of your support and have a fantastic day.